The title of this session is How I Learned to Read, Strategies for and Benefits of Reading Hebrew Regularly. Now, when I began prepping this lecture at around 5:15 this morning. Oh, you heard that right. That's right. When I began working on this and I put the title on the page, I wrote Strategies for and Benefits of Reading Regularly. And the reason I did that is because many of these, I didn't do that intentionally, but the reason my mind went there is because many of these strategies and benefits will work with Greek too. So, you know, if you've jumped in here because you think, hey, I need to beef up my Hebrew, then these strategies will help you specifically for Hebrew. I have resources up here that I'll show you or you're welcome to look at related to the benefits of Hebrew specifically. But if Greek is your gig, these strategies will work similarly, okay? So just know that it'll go back and forth. It also works with English, you know? I mean, read a little bit every day, you're gonna learn it, okay? And that's where I kind of want to begin with by way of an illustration. My younger children are both in, well, I couldn't tell you what grade they're in. They're both in first grade. They're homeschooled, so they're in whatever grade we tell them they're in. They're both in at a first grade level, and they're currently learning. So our third son, just to give you context, they're not twins. Our third son is from Congo, and our youngest two, one's from Congo, and the other one was born a month before he came home. So we got pregnant during the adoption process, had our fourth child before our third child came home. So we call them temporal adoptive twins. That's what we call them. So they're both in first grade together, even though they're a year apart age-wise, but they're both in first grade together. Well, they're learning to read in English, okay? And we're sitting there with them reading. My wife is sitting there with them reading. And, can, man, stan. And my wife is just like, how many times am I gonna have to read this phonic? And, can, stan, man. But you see what they're doing. It's repetition. It's fundamentals. It's basics, right? And then they go to the, you know, the good old, I don't know what they are now, Jane ran. See Jane run. They're learning conjugations. Ran, see Jane run. They're learning that a A-N-E is Jane, not ran. You see, instead of an A, we aren't sitting there teaching them. Well, maybe we are, but you don't remember it. That when two vowels go walking, the first one does the talking. Bean, E-A, B-E-A-N, right? Two vowels go walking, the first one does the talking, and it says its name, bean. Well, okay, that's real cute when we're learning to read, which is why you take introductory Hebrew classes. But at some point, rather quickly with our children, we move to actually reading. And then you forget all of the rules you learned about morphology because you can read, okay? So what I want you to start doing and what I hope I can encourage you to do is to read a little bit every day, because the way I usually say it, that's where the magic happens. That's where the magic happens. That's where the magic happens in your brain. That's where the magic happens in your eyes. That's where the magic happens in your heart. When you get into the Word of God in the original language, that's where it becomes exciting and fresh. And my goal is to get students there faster. What I have done, I teach Hebrew here with a morphology-heavy system. I use Russell Fuller's textbook and Kyungwon Choi, the Invitation to Biblical Hebrew. I use that textbook. That's the one I cut my teeth on. Dr. Fuller was my supervisor, so that's what I've always used. That's what I know. But what I've done with that textbook is I've supplemented Deuteronomy worksheets. I've supplemented Ruth worksheets. I've tried to supplement places to get the students in the text so that I can say, okay, an inseparable preposition gets a vocal schwa normally. Now let's go to Deuteronomy and find all kinds of them. because that's where the magic happens. We're in the Bible, we're seeing the payoff, and the more you read, the more that will help. My children can now read a book, they can read through it, and they can follow the story, and it's exciting. Reading is no longer just a list of words or a list of paradigms. Reading becomes, oh, that was a fascinating story, you see? And so read a little bit every day. That's the goal. And so I want to give you some strategies for those and kind of how to do that. The first thing that I want to mention to you, and I think that this is outlined in your handout. I think that, did everybody get a handout? Anybody not have one? Okay, Daniel, if somebody can, I don't know if I can go too far, but, oh, he's coming to get it. Okay. I can go quite a ways, but I have to, oh, look at that. I've got quite a bit of room. There you go. Thanks, sir. So you've got an outline on here. And then the first thing I want to show you, though, is this notion of what to read. So if we're going to start reading, what are we going to read? And I've given you these three lists. On your sheet, I think that the one list on the left-hand column, if you'll look at the bottom of it, it probably says Nahum / Song of Songs. That list actually has Song of Songs after Nahum, but I moved it up to the other column just so I could keep that on one page for your thing. So just know that that's how that works out. It's not going to matter too much because by the time you get there, you'll have read quite a bit already anyway. But these lists are, I've given you the footnotes there as well of what these lists are and where they have come from, so you can kind of see. The one on the far left is ranked, so this is ranked by difficulty of vocabulary alone. It's ranked by difficulty of vocabulary alone. So based on this list, the way it has been statistically ironed out, and I'll have to let you go to those websites and links in the footnotes to see how they've defined this. The way it's been laid out is 2 Chronicles is the easiest book to read by way of just vocabulary alone. That has to do with occurrences of vocabulary. I think, if I remember correctly, it's number of words that occur most often. 2 Chronicles has the most of those in any book in the Hebrew Bible. So, you know, if you learn 100 words and more, chances are you can read the majority of 2 Chronicles, vocabulary-wise, okay? The middle column here is unique vocabulary. And can somebody look at the footnote there and tell me for number two, is this the one that was done by Yates? Yates, okay, so to the best of my, what he did was, and you can go to his blog and see what he has done with this one. I've contacted all these guys and asked permission to use these, so they would be glad to talk to you about it, I'm sure, too. But you can go to his blog and kind of see what he's done, and he's unique vocabulary means things like, he has accounted statistically for hapax legomena. He has accounted statistically for very rare vocabulary. So he's put together this kind of statistical algorithm to account for some of those more obscure vocabulary pieces and then ranked these by ease. So Deuteronomy has the fewest number of those obscure vocabulary parameters. Does that make sense? Song of Songs has the most of those obscure vocabulary parameters. So that's how he has ranked that one. And you can see Deuteronomy right there at the top as what I would consider to be some of the easiest Hebrew to read. I mentioned that to my class this week. So notice on column one, let me ask you this. Where do you guys start? Where do most people start reading Hebrew? What books? Everybody starts in Genesis? Yeah, Ruth and Jonah are the ones that I... How many of you started in Genesis? Did you start in Genesis? Just because that was the first one, or that's what your professor did? Gentry would do that. Genesis is not bad, and it's familiar to us largely. But most people, most like third semester students will start in Ruth or Jonah because they're short and they're relatively easy. But look at these charts based on vocabulary. I don't have these numbered, but look at where Ruth and Jonah is on the bottom, on the far left, pretty far down there after Numbers. And then Ruth and Jonah, you know, what, maybe 10, 11 down in the middle column. So these are not necessarily the easiest, but that's where a lot of people start. I've got an additional handout right here if you want it. Sorry, I thought about that when you came in. There you go. Yeah, no problem. Thank you. So now, both of those columns are just vocabulary. Go to the third column on the far right, and you've got vocabulary and syntax. This also is kind of a wild statistical algorithm to make these up. And this one actually came from a Facebook post by a guy named John Wayne Coatney. What I want you to be aware of on this one is the only syntax parameter that he has put in play is the amount of poetry. And that's great because poetry tends to be more difficult than prose. So that's why he has used that parameter. But poetry is often difficult to identify in Hebrew. Now, we know Psalms, Proverbs, and Job are poetry because the Masoretic accent system tells us that. The parallelism also tells us that. But outside of those three books, we don't have any morphological markers that we're looking at poetry. You just kind of have to decide, is there enough parallelism here to define poetry? So that even gets a little bit tricky, but it's the best thing I could find without doing my own 6-month analysis of what's defined as syntax. So he has combined both vocabulary and syntax, put it through a ranking system, and then now ranked these books in amount of ease based on vocab and syntax. So use those as a reference for you. That maybe defines or, you know, tells you what those lists are. But what, in essence, what would happen is the books of the Bible that are at the top of this list would tend to be easier. Okay, and you can see that no one group matches exactly. On the vocabulary and syntax column, you can see that Ruth and Jonah bump up quite a bit in the syntax category. Again, what to read, there's a resource for you. Now, when we talk about what to read, the reason I want to give you this in rank of ease is because you need to be realistic with your goals. And you need to be honest with yourself about where you're at. If you go just break open Nahum because you like, destructive Assyrian judgment, you're going to be really disappointed in your Hebrew because it's going to be really hard. And you're going to sit there and wonder, what have I done? Like, I cannot do that. No, you can. Go to Deuteronomy and you're going to be fine. You see what I'm saying? I had a student last year who took the second semester Hebrew with me, and he needed one more elective class before he graduated in the spring. So he took he wanted to do more Hebrew, but there wasn't a class offered at the time that he wanted to do it. So he did an independent study with me, so two semesters of Hebrew, and we did an independent study in the Minor Prophets, Hebrew exegesis. I was like, take that. So he's translating all kinds of, we didn't do all of the Minor Prophets, but he's translating all kinds of passages, and he started with Nahum, because he didn't know the difference, and I didn't coach him along as I probably should have. And he was just talking about how hard it was. Well, he got to Haggai. Look at Haggai sitting right there at the top of the vocabulary and syntax list. Now, Haggai is not easy, but it when you combine this syntax and vocab algorithm, it gets up there pretty far. And he was like, I think I'm really learning something. And I was like, no, you're not. You just moved to an easier book. But he really was learning something, of course. But be honest with where you're at. Be honest with your current status and choose something to start with that's going to encourage you and motivate you, okay? That's a good way to think about it. Let me see if there's something else. Okay. So based on these lists, what I usually will recommend is Ruth, Jonah, or Deuteronomy. I think Deuteronomy is probably the easiest. You're largely familiar with a lot of the storyboards, so when you come across odd syntax or difficult vocabulary, you can usually figure a lot of it out. There's a lot of repeated vocabulary in Deuteronomy. Ruth and Jonah I recommend to people just simply because there are so many resources out there for them, so many readers and so many options for Ruth and Jonah that you can get a lot of help. Okay, so those are the ones I recommend. There is this new grammar by Carl Kutz and Becky Josberger. How many of you are familiar with this? Okay, this just came out last couple of months, maybe October, November. There's a workbook that's associated with it that is coming out soon, probably March or April it should be out. They wanted it out at the same time, but they're having some typesetting struggles with it. So there's a workbook that goes with this. Their methodology, they begin with Genesis 37 through 50, but they have students reading it in week 4. So think about when you started Hebrew, alphabet, week one. Week four, you're reading the Genesis, the Joseph narrative in Genesis. Now, there's a lot of helps in that workbook. That's why I'm recommending it to you, because if you wanted to start with Genesis, as many of you have, you could start with the Joseph narrative, and once this workbook comes out, you're going to have a lot of helps. Proper names are identified, so you're not trying to parse those. For some of the more obscure weak verbs, those have been parsed for you already. Each reading has vocabulary lists at the top that highlight the words in that reading, so you're learning vocab along with it. So that would be another good resource and a place to start for you. Another option here that would be just a strategy for reading a little bit every day is you could read whatever it is that the Daily Dose of Hebrew is walking through. Maybe stay a couple of verses ahead. This kind of came up this week in class. Somebody mentioned this. This was not my idea. But you kind of translate the Daily Dose videos, stay a couple of verses ahead, and then when the videos come out, now you've got your answer key. You know, now you've got your help to kind of help walk you through it. So I think maybe some of these other ones are a little bit better options, but that one would be an option too. I do want to show you guys this. I don't know if you can see this super well. This is Adullam Publishing. This company, Adullam Publishing, was started by my TA, Jonathan Algren. And we had this idea to make workbooks. And we actually tested out this Ruth workbook this past semester in a third semester Hebrew class. And what these are basically the text. Let me see if I can show it to you. Yeah, here you go. So you've got the text of the passage with space to write. You've got parsing space to parse all the verbs over on the left. And then you've got translational lines here. So that's what the workbook looks like. And we've made these specifically for Ruth and Jonah because I do Ruth in class. Ruth is archived on Daily Dose website. And then you have the parsing information. Inside of this handbook is a parsing guide. So you not only have all of the parsings you can go look up, but you also have, look at the footnotes. Jonathan has gone through and written footnotes with morphological notation of what's happening in these verbs. And he has put references to Dr. Fuller's grammar in there so you can go look these things up. So great resource there. And then you also have in here just a clean text. So you've got the one that you can really dive into, and then you have just a clean text that you can go read these as well. So we're walking through Obadiah right now in Daily Dose, and Jonah is archived as well that Dr. Furtado had done. So if you're interested in something to help you just have a format for walking through those, there's another resource for you, okay? Adullam Publishing, and all these pictures here. Jonathan went on a trip with us to Israel this summer. All these pictures that flip through here are pictures that he took in Israel this summer, so I just sometimes sit there and watch his pictures flip because it reminds me of our trip. So, all right, any questions on those? What to read? Just wanted to throw those things at you, and you can decide what you want to do, but you've got at least a strategy and lists to work from. Yes, sir?
After the first book, I'm sorry, I missed the first book.
This one is Carl Kutz and Rebecca Josberger. I think I'm saying that correctly. Does anybody know these guys? I have spoken with them, but I didn't call them by their last names. These guys are delightful. I had a great Skype call with Carl and Becky, and they... I was going to say they share my passion for the language. I share their passion for the language. They've been doing this far longer than I have, but excellent resource there. That's published by Lexham Press, if you're interested. Yes, sir?
So, Daily Dose of Hebrew, I noticed that when I was looking at Ruth chapter 1, there's only like videos on the first 9 verses, but the chapter has 22 verses. Is
this on the Daily Dose website?
Yeah.
There probably somewhere is like a... you know, load more or page 2. They are all there. Yeah, we recently have just kind of retooled all of the archiving to try to make it more manageable. So you should be able to get to it pretty easily. Another resource for you as far as the Daily Dose videos is the Gospel Coalition website has made things called courses in Hebrew. And they've pulled the Daily Dose videos into their courses. So there's a course on the Gospel Coalition website for Amos, and there's a course for Ruth because we've completed those whole books. There's also a course for Jonah. So that's kind of another one-stop shop to get all of these videos, and so you can do that. All right. The next thing we want to look at is what resources to read with. What resources to read with. So we go through these, we're going to build from kind of a wheelchair method to an elite athlete model. Okay, so the ones I give you first are the easiest ones, and ones that you probably want to move out of rather quickly. Okay, but they are available, and I would encourage, if it gets you to read, then use it. Well, interlinears are a cheat. Yeah, are you going to read without it? Well, no. Then get an interlinear, for crying out loud. That's fine, you know? I used to say the same thing. Now, you know what is cheating? What is it? Yeah, that's cheating too. I'll get to that one. What do you call it when you put the Hebrew characters into English characters? Transliteration. You can tell what kind of week I've had. Transliteration is cheating. That's a non-language. I cannot stand transliteration. I know some people love it, and I know it works, and I know a lot of people teach it, but man, I'm reading a commentary. The one, you know what I look for in a commentary? I open it up, and I see if there's Hebrew text. And if I see transliteration, I put it back. And that is my personal problem. That is not a problem with the author, but it just drives me berserkos. And if I had learned it, then I probably would be okay. But anyway, all right. So wheelchair models and on. We're going to get a little bit more. Second thing that I want to highlight here before we get started in the actual what resources to read with is I want you to learn to read every text out loud in Hebrew. So as you're reading along, don't just look at it and translate it. Read it out loud, because what you're doing in that case is you're starting to incorporate your ears, you're starting to incorporate your mouth and your phonetics, you're incorporating your eyes, and you're combining all those senses together, okay? If you're reading through Nahum or something like that, and you're reading it out loud, maybe turn on some Lord of the Rings battle music in the background or something. You know, that was funny, I just thought of that. Engage as many senses as you can is what I'm getting at. Engage as many senses as you can. Maybe you turn the heat up when you're reading about in Numbers or something, the wilderness wanderings. I don't know what you do, but engage as many senses as you can. Read the text out loud. Now that I know, I get it. The next, how do I know if I'm reading it correctly? Well, you've got resources. So go to somewhere like this. This actually just moved, and I just noticed it this morning. This reading of the Hebrew Bible used to be at a different place, Academy of Ancient Languages or something like that, and it's now moved here to Torah class. But then even here, it has been archived from a different website. But what you have here is the Hebrew Bible being read. Now, this is being read by an old rabbi gentleman who has since passed away. So it's going to sound very rabbinic and very liturgical. It's not chanted like the liturgical text. So it is read. But when you hear him get started, it's going to, Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz. And you're like, oh my goodness. Just listen for a while. You'll get it. Okay. Now, the difficulty with this one is that you can see they're by chapter, okay? So if you're reading along and you're trying to think, did I pronounce that correctly, you're going to have to just follow quickly. But in my classes, I will provide MP3s and stuff when they're reading so that they can go through it slowly. But here's something you can go to and say, yeah, I'm reading it correctly or not. But read it out loud. Read it out loud. It's going to engage another sense, and it's going to be more fun, in my opinion. If you would like to record any of those and send them to me, I'd be glad to laugh with you, okay? One of the assignments I had students do a few semesters ago with Ruth was they had to read, we had Ruth broken down throughout the whole semester each week, and each week they had to read that section out loud, and they had to record it and upload it through our learning management system to the class. And I had the best time. I think, Phil, I actually think Benaiah was in that class when we did that, and he would record it, video, not just audio, he would video it, and I just had the best time watching those and listening to it. And you know, they come up to a Kamet Satuf and they're like, kata, kat, oh no, kotla, yeah, all right, got it. And I'm just like, I mentioned to you yesterday, enjoying the journey, you know, enjoying the journey. Maybe I enjoy your journey more than you do, but that, like, laugh at yourself. It's fun. And don't take yourself too seriously. Anyway. Okay, what to read with. Number one, read with an interlinear or a reversed interlinear. You guys are largely familiar with these. Here's the Accordance interlinear. I want to show you how to do these. Here is a print interlinear. This one is by Crossway, if anybody wants to come look at this a bit later. The interlinear, you know, largely has the text, and then it has this one. In electronic versions, you can put a lot of different things in here. So the way to get the interlinear in Accordance is this little button right here. So when you bring up the BHS text, you can show this one. You can hide and show the interlinear just right there. Then when you hide and show the interlinear, you can decide with these little check marks what you actually want to see. So if you want to see parsings, parts of speech, but not the English, you can actually take that out so you don't get the gloss. Or if you could care less about the tagging, I think it's the key. Yep, you can take that key out. So now you get the roots, the part of speech, and the gloss. So you can decide what you want on those, which is very nice. In this one, what is this one? Logos. You actually would need to get the Lexham Hebrew English Interlinear Bible. That's where they have the interlinear options. But this one, check this out. I know you can't see this super well, but it's the same concept. With this little thing, you can toggle actually to a reader's edition and then change the number of occurrences, how many times a word occurs that you get defined. So you have kind of the interlinear, but only with words that you may not know. So some very nice pieces here that you can use an interlinear and keep reading along. And again, if you're in the text, that's the goal. That's the goal, okay? The interlinear, you guys know, will give you probably more help than you need. The place where I use an interlinear, or where I would recommend it, again, I mentioned to you that I use a morphology-heavy system when I teach. The grammar that I use goes all the way through the details of Hebrew morphology before getting into the Hebrew text. Now, there are translations that are just made up throughout the textbook so that you can be learning how to translate, but there's no biblical text, and so that's part of why I supplement it. But when we get through that whole grammar, and now we're trying to jump into Ruth, these guys have never seen all the jots and tittles and marks and circles and dots and letters that are in the Hebrew Bible. So I'm like, here, have an interlinear for the first 2 weeks, because what they begin to do is see, okay, that's the verb, that's the subject, there's the object, and they learn Hebrew word order is verb, subject, object by seeing it kind of done for them. Does that make sense? I think that's a fine place to go. Most people don't use that system. The morphology-heavy system of learning Hebrew. So largely the interlinear, I think, won't be, most of you probably won't need to use that. But that's one that maybe you could recommend to others for that purpose. This method would be a major crutch, potentially, that wheelchair kind of idea. So largely you guys could move from that one, I think. Next, number two, reading with a diglot. Let me show you the diglot here. A diglot is basically just a way of having the Hebrew text on one side and the English text on another. And you don't have parsing information, you don't have that kind of thing, but you've got the both texts together. The one I think I wrote down here, yeah, a few of these that are available. Crossway has an ESV Hebrew English Old Testament that is a diglot. The American Bible Society has one that has the New King James Version, if you prefer that English version. And then the Bible Society in Israel has one with the New American Standard. So you've got several options there if you wanted those. Another thing I want to bring up while I'm on this topic is another reading strategy that I didn't have in here, but I just thought about this, is to read outside of the Hebrew Bible. So get as much Hebrew as you can, and maybe even in familiar places to you. This is a Hebrew English New Testament. So this is printed by the Bible Society in Israel. I got this summer, and funny enough, here's the deal. I take my Hebrew Bible to chapel here on campus. Nobody ever preaches from the Old Testament. I'm like, how am I going to learn my Hebrew? Like, how am I going to keep up with my Hebrew and read along? And, well, I went and got a Hebrew New Testament, by golly. Now, of course, it's not, it's modern. We have to pay. But there's vowel points in here, right? So another diglot, that's why it came up here. But, you know, don't be afraid to jump outside of the Old Testament and still just inundate your life with Hebrew, okay? That's my subtle... Well, never mind. I don't know what I'm subtly trying to say there. I'm not saying get rid of your Greek, but what I'm saying is love Hebrew too, even in the New Testament. All right. Diglots there in Logos. This is pretty easy to do. You just bring up a text, and then you can go here and find multiple versions that you would want to put alongside of it. And you just search in this little pane. It's going to bring up all kinds of options, and then you check box them, and those will read right alongside. So, like, if I wanted to also put with this, I can't find one right now. Let's just say the American Standard Version. When I close out of it, it'll pop up there too. Okay, so you can just easily click on what you want, unclick it. Oops, I didn't want that one. Unclick it. So now I've got, so that's how you would do the diglot in Logos. Okay. The next one, read with a reader's edition, a reader's Hebrew Bible. This is probably going to be the most common methodology for you guys to read, just simply because of the vocab. I said gave my class some statistics this week. 9,980 words in the distinct words in the Hebrew Bible. This vocabulary book right here by George Landis, I would commend to you. They have a lot of these in Lifeway, I think. They picked them up for the conference. Learns vocabulary by verbal root. So, like, you learn the verbal root, and then you see all of its associated nominal cognates. So you can kind of have that connection point. Very nice. He has about 2,100 words in here. And that's, what did we say, a little over 20% of the vocabulary in the Hebrew Bible. But his lists go down to 10 occurrences and more. Think about a word in the Hebrew Bible that only occurs 10 times. And you would know that and still only know 20% of the words in the Hebrew Bible. Well, why is that? Because 9 chapters of Chronicles are genealogies with unique names of people. You see what I'm saying? Those are unique vocabulary words. Joshua 13 to 19, you've got all the, you've got Nachalah, the inheritance, all over the place, but you've got all these different place names that are in there too. You see that? So, why was I saying that? Reader's edition, because that's a ton of vocabulary, and it's just a lot. It's hard. Reader's editions are going to give you some vocab helps for some of those more obscure words. What did we learn this week in class? We did 300 words this week in class, and that was 136 occurrences and more. So the words that we learned occur 136 times or more. The Zondervan Reader's Edition glosses words for you that occur 100 times or more. So I think we decided in a week, I don't know how well you've learned them, but in a week we've covered, we only needed to cover 82 more words, and then along with this, you would be able to just sit down and read it with no other helps. If you learned all 382 words, learn all of those well, and you've got this to gloss the rest of them, you can just sit down, open this up, and start reading. That's beautiful. And encouraging. And encouraging. Now, the Hendrickson volume of, yes? This one, $59.99 is what this one's listed at. The Hendrickson volume. You have the Hendrickson volume. You don't have it with you. No, that's fine. You sit in the same place in every class. I know, that is so funny. That just dawned on me when I was like, I knew where to go to find the Hendrickson volume. So here's the Hendrickson volume. Do you mind if I ask you how much you paid for that? Do you remember? You know, I feel like I need to look this up now because I want to think I saw it this morning on Hendrickson for like $39.95. And there's a leather version too, so if you want to put that beside of your Hebrew chair, $59.99. Okay, so I don't know how to read. So yeah, $59.95 for the one, the volume here that's hardback, and then the leather one at $79. So that one, this one, I bring it up because it glosses words that occur 70 times or less. So you'd have to get a bit more vocab under your belt to be able to just sit down with this one. But some of the benefits of this one is it's hardback and it's bound better, so it's going to last longer. The other thing is this volume has a parsing guide. Now you're going to have to learn their nomenclature for parsing because they use, I don't know what the standard that they're using is, but is it German? Yeah, so the call is a G, but that stands for Grundstamm, which is the ground stem or the bass stem. The D stem is the doubled stem, which is the PL. The DP is the doubled passive stem, the Pual. The DH is the doubled Hithpael stem. So you just have to learn that nomenclature, but when you do, you've got verbs parsed as well for you down in the margin. So I prefer this one, the Hendrickson volume, mainly just because it's beefier, but the Zondervan one is good too. So reader's edition, those can be encouraging. This is probably the most recommended place to begin. Now, in academia, I usually will not allow my students to use a reader's edition. I want them to look things up. I want them to, so when we assign Hebrew Bibles, it's very often just the straight up BHS. But for reading purposes, absolutely go by. Like, I will sometimes put it on my syllabus as a required textbook because some students will get, they get like, funding for school or help with it if it's a required textbook. So absolutely it's required. Go read for the rest of your life in the reader's edition. That'd be fine with me. Again, if it gets you reading, that's great. If I'm not allowed to do that, take that out of the video too, or the audio. Number four, reading with a reader's lexicon. Reading with a reader's lexicon. There are some print versions of these. I don't have one. Zondervan, a reader's Hebrew English lexicon of the Old Testament, is one of these. It's edited by Armstrong, Busby, and Carr. The layout of this one, okay, the layout of a reader's lexicon. How many of you are familiar with a reader's lexicon? Okay, yeah, so a reader's lexicon, what it's going to do is, like, you'll start in Genesis, and it'll lay out the vocabulary for Genesis 1:1, and then the next section, Genesis 1:2, Genesis 1:3, Genesis 1:4. And so your vocabulary goes with, and they're glossed, with what you're reading. So it ends up looking something like this. How many of you use Accordance? Anybody? Okay. Do you know how to build these in Accordance? Watch this. So you highlight the text, you right-click. Hold on, I'm lost. Okay, let me do it up here then. You highlight the text, go to Amplify, Language, Parsing. Boom. So you've got all your vocabulary here for Genesis 1. Then you move down to Genesis 2, and here's all your vocabulary words in Genesis 2. And then you also can change these columns as to what's going to be in a certain column or the information it's going to give you. So if you don't want the lexical form, or if you don't want the transliteration is on there. Look at that. That's terrible. So if you can adjust what you see on that and make it more or less whatever you need, but that's going to be what we, that's kind of the layout of a reader's lexicon. That would be another good resource to have and read with. Yep. Yeah, good. So you don't right click. I thought you can right click somewhere. I just don't know. So it's here. Look up parsing. And that'll give you the same thing for the right click. But the other one to do, Henry, is this. Amplify, right up here. Amplify, language. So user notes, user tools, language. And then you've got parsing. You also have here word chart. That's going to give you a similar kind of thing. And again, you can adjust what shows up here. But that does not always give you the parsing. So either of those will give you that same notion. And it's going to be in the order of whatever texts you choose there. Okay, so that's a reader's lexicon. If you've got a print edition, you're going to have another copy, another something with you while you're reading. That's okay. That's okay. All right. Next, reading with a lexicon or a dictionary. This is going to be just having BDB or Haylot or Dictionary of Classical Hebrew or something like that right there beside of you. Now, the benefit of this one is that you're going to have more information with each word that you look up. So now you're not only just seeing a gloss in a lexicon or some sort of dictionary or glossary, you're actually going to see all of the forms. For something like BDB, you're going to see in the call, the word means this. In the PL, the word might mean this. In the PUAL, the word might mean this. And it's going to go through all those forms. So you just get a ton more information, which is nice. The other thing that's beneficial for a lexicon and especially a print volume is I don't know the psychology behind it, but there is something about the tactile movement of pages that makes things sink in. I use Bible software like this. I can triple click a word and get anywhere I want to in a lexicon like that. So it's really nice. But there's something about sitting down and flipping through the lexicon that works and helps. So that's another benefit to just forcing yourself to sit down with a lexicon. I will tell you, BDB is quite old. This came up in class this week. BDB is very old. The research is very old, but it is very cheap. BDB is like $25-$30, and it is phenomenal for $25-$30. If you have 10 times that, is 10 times 30, 300? Thanks, not a math guy. If you have 10 times that, then you can buy Halot, the Hebrew and Aramaic lexicon of the Old Testament. Literally, like I'm not blowing smoke on that. It's $330 or something like that. So it's better research. It's more updated research based on ancient Near Eastern research and comparative linguistics. So it's better, but it's far more expensive. So something like that would be good. And you guys know largely maybe the benefits of these in the Bible software. So for instance, I've got mine set up to where I can just triple click the word, and then here I've got BDB and the whole entry right there at my fingertips, okay? And then you can keep clicking along in here with various things and seeing what it is. This one in Accordance, I can actually change it to the New International Dictionary of Old Testament Theology and Exegesis. I can change it to whatever else I have in here. I don't know what I have, but that's an excellent resource. In Logos, I think I've got it set for a double click. Yeah, and then it takes me directly to the Dictionary of Classical Hebrew. So that's the benefit of those, is just the speed of it. Now, as it relates to reading with digital versions like this and the speed of that, well, I'll get to that in a minute because I've got different ways to read. Are we still? Oh man, we gotta go. Reading with digital texts—that's where I'm at. How about that? So I've been showing you a lot of this already, so I don't need to rehash how you read in these ways with digital texts. But one thing that I would maybe say in this regard is you need to discipline yourself to not let the digital versions help you too much. If you can use it as a diglot, or if you can use it as a reader's edition, or if you can use it to go directly to the BDB entry and then search that and make your own conclusions on how you would translate it, if you can discipline yourself to do that, it is a very fast and easy and nice way to do it. But don't let that deter you from the hard digging work of having a lexicon right there beside of you. Because of the speed of my life, which is shameful, I use the Bible software a lot for these very reasons, but for the speed reason, but I will always discipline myself to go to the lexicon, go to several lexica, and try to discern what the word is rather than just scrolling over the English or scrolling over the other one. So try to discipline yourself to do that. That's the goal. Okay. How long to read? Is this point number three for you guys? How long to read? If you know if you've seen these Couch to 5K programs, you seen these? You don't just get up on day one and go run a 5K, do you? You better not. It's small chunks, right? Isn't that what it is? You do smaller chunks, and then you build, and then you build, and then you build. So how long do you read? I would say you start small and you build, because that's going to be encouraging to you. I would recommend starting with 10 minutes a day. I would recommend starting with 10 minutes a day. Two of those minutes can be the Daily Dose video. Two of those minutes can be the Daily Dose video, and then now you've got 8 minutes to kind of keep going through that same passage, or continue reading other passages, or just try to finish that verse out. In 10 minutes a day, you're going to start, and you might get through a clause. That is fine. Get through the next clause the next day, right? Get through the next clause the next day, and by day 3 or 4 or a week in or a month in, you're going to be getting 2 or 3 verses in 10 minutes. And you've got to start somewhere and be honest with where you're starting and let that be okay. But do it. Build. The Lord's not asking us for results. He's asking us for faithfulness. And He'll take care of the results. All right? I did some statistics this morning because I'm not a math guy and I had to use a calculator for this. If you do 10 minutes a day, I don't know the 10 minutes a day. Nope, 10 minutes a day, 60 hours in a year, 2.53 days of straight reading. So sit down with your Hebrew Bible, open it up, and don't stop for 2.53 days. That would be how much reading you could get done in the original text of God's Word if you read just 10 minutes a day over the course of a year. Double that, you're up to a little over 5 whole days, 5 24-hour periods of reading if you just do 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the evening. If you can build that 10 minutes up to 30 minutes a day, which is what we recommend, then you're at 7.6 days a year, whole days a year, one entire week of your year has been devoted exclusively to reading the Hebrew text. So you think, well, 10 minutes, that's not going to get me very... Yeah, it will. In this commit to the long-term goal of learning this language and keeping a hold of it, 10 minutes a day will get you a lot of ground, okay? So how long to read? Start small, but I build to 10 minutes a day. Another note that I would recommend to you here, and I've already said this quickly, is designate how long to read. Don't designate how far to read. Get a timer out, set 10 minutes, and when it goes off, stop. And if you're halfway through a verse, that's fine. If you want to finish the verse, that's fine. But set a timer and let that be your guide, because what's going to happen if you sit down and say, I'm going to read through the first chapter of Genesis today, and 2 hours later you've finished, you're going to be discouraged because we just don't have that kind of time in our culture. Back in the monasteries, they had that kind of time. We don't, but they also didn't have Bible software, so they're looking up every occurrence of a word as they read through it. Can you imagine that? So set a timer, read for that length of time, and then stop. Again, faithfulness, not necessarily results. It will build, I can promise you that. It will build, okay? Now, what kind of reading to do? What kind of reading to do? First, I would say slow grammatical reading. These aren't like building in any way. These are just various options. You could choose any one. Slow grammatical reading. This kind of reading is where you're going to translate a text and then slowly begin to digest the grammar and syntax. So slow grammatical reading. You're going to ask questions of how certain word functions in a sentence, look up various grammatical concepts in a grammar or in some sort of intermediate syntax guide, something like that, where you're just kind of reinforcing your grammar, but you're reading slowly. That's one way to read, one kind of reading to do. A book to have on hand for this one that's nice is either of these two, really, the Pocket Dictionary for the Study of Biblical Hebrew. This one is going to work great if you're using either of these two resources, this series of resources, because there's a ton of these in Lifeway too. I love these things, but every author comes at syntax and grammar from a different perspective. So what I'm going to call a proper annexation genitive with a implied lamed preposition, they're going to call a bound noun that of possession. Well, what in the world is a bound noun? And so you can go look that up, and it's going to be in here. And largely, you probably already know what they're talking about. You just don't know what they're talking about. So if you have this, you look it up, and then you go, oh, I know what that is. So that's helpful. And then this one is going to be a quick guide for just some syntactical notes, but also paradigms in here as you're reading. This is a great resource. I asked Miles one time, I'm like, okay, look, I love your stuff. I love what you're doing. I love your enthusiasm, but I use a different grammar. How can I get people to partake in what you're doing too? And he said, give them this. Because it's the concise version, it's all the nuts and bolts, and it's, I think I came to class once this week with it in my back pocket, And I was like, oh, look, there you go. So that's a good piece there too for this slow grammatical reading. You can look up some things there. Next, we would have a slow exploratory reading. This becomes something kind of like a choose your own adventure. Maybe you're not going to stay in the Hebrew text, but you're still learning Hebrew and exploring various things. Maybe one day you click on a word, takes you to a lexicon, then you now start to say something like, well, I wonder how many times that word occurs in this book. You triple click, search the word, and you see how many times this word occurs in the book. You start reading those verses, and you see what... Maybe one day you look up a grammatical clause. This is a genitive construction. Well, I wonder how many times this genitive construction occurs. Highlight the genitive construction, search. Now you can see all of those occurrences. Start reading those, and now you're seeing how that... Just slow exploratory reading. You might get through a half of a verse, but you've done a ton of exploring of grammatical concepts and things of that nature. That would be one to do as well. Next, we have slow contemplative reading. This kind of reading is going to be focused more on devotional insights and meditation on God's Word in the original Hebrew. That's the goal here with slow contemplative reading. The goal is spiritual nourishment in this way. Now, it doesn't mean that you throw the grammar out the window, but what it does mean is that we delight in the message of God's Word that is produced by the grammar. And that can be incredibly rewarding. I talk about, people ask me why you love Hebrew so much, and I'll oftentimes say it's thick and rich. And what's the example one of my favorite examples? Oh, that's funny. My mind must work in similar ways. I have this example in my notes right here to talk about. Deuteronomy 6:5, I mentioned this yesterday. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and bechol me'odecha. With all your veriness. And you know what? English word strength just doesn't cut it. I know what your veriness is. I can't articulate what it means to love the Lord with all your veriness. Everybody following me here? Bechol me'odecha. It's with all, bechol, bait preposition, kol, with all, your veriness. Me'od, very exceedingly. The promised land. Tova ha'aretz, me'od, me'od. A good land, very, very. Oh, I love it. So I know what veriness means, but I can't articulate it. And when you get into Deuteronomy 6:5 in the original language, and you just can be nourished by this notion of, yes, every fiber of my being is what I want to love the Lord with and what I am called to love the Lord with all my heart, with all my soul, and with all my veriness. Like that, anyway, that's just rewarding. And you'll find that when you slow down and read contemplatively. One of the things that I encourage my classes with in reading Hebrew is that it's not that you'll necessarily find anything new when you start translating Hebrew. You may translate the verse, you may look at the words, you translate the verse, you read through it, and it reads just like your ESV or just like your CSB or just like your NASB, whatever it is you use, it reads just the same. There's not like this epiphany of, oh, I now understand the Bible, because the English translations are very good. But what happens is you slow down. And now, instead of just a cursory reading of the English text, you start to digest some of those pieces that you already know, but because the Hebrew has forced you to slow down, they start to sink in. That's this slow contemplative reading. Okay. The last one here is fast reading, and this might be one of my favorite examples. Kutz and Josberger do this as well in their classes. It's not listed in their grammar, but fast reading. Now, fast reading can be done in one of two scenarios. One of the scenarios is that you've gotten good enough at Hebrew that you can just sit down and read long sections of text quickly. That may be toward the end of our lives, but that's fine. That's going to be toward the end of my life, I promise you that. And I do this every day, so I told my class this week, there were so many people in my class this week who could read Hebrew better than I can, and it was humbling and joyful at the same time. So there, you'll get to that point where you can just sit down and read long sections at a time quickly. That's beautiful. The other way that most of us should probably use this fast reading technique is to read the same passage, a lengthy passage, every day until you can digest it and comprehend it in the Hebrew without formally translating it in your mind. Did you follow? Where you can sit down and say, Ahav ta Adonai Elohecha, love the Lord your God. Bechol levavecha, bechol nafshecha, bechol meodecha. And you just like, I just got chills actually. That's weird, I'm sorry. But you just feel it. But you saw oftentimes, if it's not your heart language, you have to read it, the same passage over and over and over again, to where you're reading Vahavta and you're not having to think, call perfect 2FS with a Vav consecutive that takes the perfect and makes it an imperfect, and so, but it has kind of an imperatival force. Okay, you shall love. No. The only way to get beyond that is to do it enough, and if you read the same passage over and over and over again, a lengthy passage for several days, you can start to do that, where you're looking at the Hebrew and you're digesting it as you're reading it. That is comprehension. Their grammar here, introductory reading for comprehension. Learn biblical Hebrew, reading for comprehension. So one of the assignments that Carl and Becky have their students do is they read Genesis 1, 1 through 5, and Deuteronomy 6, 1 through 5. Those two passages they read every single day. They read those every single day in Hebrew. And at first, they're just trying to figure out how to pronounce the thing. But they do that every single day for an entire semester, and by the end of that semester, they're reading Bereshit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz. And they comprehended that. In the beginning, God created. And that's a familiar passage, so that's why they choose those. But they're comprehending it in the language, long, fast reading, okay? That's another way to think of fast reading. You'll start slow and get faster, but that's another way to think of this fast reading, okay? Last thing that I would tell you is develop a habit of reading that is enjoyable for you. Don't let this be a burden. The Hebrew chair thing, kind of, that legitimately yesterday just came from the seat of my pants, my back pocket. Can I say the seat of my pants? I don't know. That just came out. I've never thought about that before. That's actually a really good idea. If you've got the funds, buy me a nice recliner and have that place that you go. Have that setting that you set up. Dr. Plummer said, how many of you read Greek for Life? Yeah, if you remember the illustration in there where he's talking about developing a habit and he gets up and has two cups of tea, makes one for him, one for his wife, and then he goes and sits down and turns on a YouTube video of a crackling fire. It's like, I know, but like, if you like to read by fireside, pull up the video of a crackling fire and get your coffee, develop that habit that's enjoyable to you, and you'll be more likely to do it. And what's going to happen is if you can set up an environment that's comfortable and enjoyable, then the text becomes enjoyable, and now reading God's Word in the original language is no longer an academic exercise. It actually becomes devotional and enjoyable. Okay, so that would be my last piece there. Develop a habit of reading that is enjoyable. For some of you, that joy might be an academic setting. You might like to sit out on a desk like this and you're standing like the old Puritans did, because you'll fall asleep if you don't. And you've got your 18 micron pens right up here. You've got your text laid out on a big 11 by 17 page, and you're just going to town on digesting everything. Maybe that's you. That's fine. If it's enjoyable, set up that scenario and then stay at it. Okay? I am out of time. Are there any just quick questions last minute? Or you can email me. My email's at the top of the handout. Yes?
Do you have any websites that will read the text
on? I don't, because largely the ones I'm aware of, the audio Hebrew Bibles that I'm aware of, even if it's reading it not in that rabbinic voice, it's going to be very fast because they're reading Hebrew. Like, there aren't any English Bibles out there either that go in the beginning. Got you see what I'm saying? So they're just not out there. But you'll catch on faster than you think. You want me to make one? Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah, question here. Yeah, that's a good question. I recommended my class this week that if you're able to do 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the evening, make the 10 minutes in the morning just a devotional reading or reading the text, and the 10 minutes in the evening reviewing a grammar, reviewing vocabulary, reviewing paradigms, something like that. There is no amount of paradigm review that will replace the reading, but if you can put them side by side, yes. If you end up doing some of this slow exploratory reading or slow grammatical reading, it may be that instead of going to Gesenius or Jean Morioka or Waltie O'Connor, one of these reference grammars, you're going back to Van Pelt to just even see what is the morphology of a 2FS suffix. You know, but you're doing that while you're reading. So I would say incorporate them together, but let reading be the bulk. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and there were people in my class this week who we were doing some detailed grammar, morphological kinds of things, could read the text no problem at all. But the details of the grammar and parsing, it was hard. And you think about a native Hebrew speaker, they don't need the vowels, they don't need the Masoretic accents, they don't need that. They know the language. So there are some people that have been doing it long enough that grammar can subside because you can already know it. For most of us, for me, I need to keep the two things kind of married together because I'm still learning it. It's not my heart language yet. It will be in the new heavens, the new earth, but not yet. No, I'm just kidding. Zephaniah says so, I think. So, all right. Thank you guys for being here. I do have to wrap up. We've got next sessions beginning at 10:15.